The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast is brought to you by Triple Threat Sports. For all your team outfitting needs, call Chris at 708-478-6090. The Black Oak in Oak Lawn, the South Suburbs' finest casual upscale dining. And Marishka's in Crest Hill, family-owned and operated since 1933. Let's drop the puck.
Welcome to the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast with NBCChicago.com's James Naveau.
It's not even so much me as it's Ronick. He's good.
And 670 The Score's hockey guy, Jay Zawoski.
You don't play this game with a big heart and a big bag of knuckles in front of the net. You don't got dinky-doo.
Welcome into this Sunday night edition of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. My name is James Naveau with NBC5 Chicago, and with me, as always, is the one, the only, father of the year, Jay Zawoski. Jay, how is today in paradise? How is it treating you?
Oh, it's lovely. At about 9 o'clock now on the dot, and at 8 o'clock, I hear my wife yelling, and I run upstairs to find out that my daughter is puking all over the place.
Yay!
So, yeah. So, the kid that cries wolf, she says her stomach hurts every night to try to get out of going to sleep, as I think most kids 6 years old do.
Kind of traditional, yeah.
It's always like, oh, my stomach hurts, my legs hurt, blah, blah, blah. Okay, shut up, go to bed, you know, typical stuff. So then the one time it's actually true, and they actually aren't lying to you about their ailments, you feel awful when you don't believe them, but it's just, you know. Of course, I'm going out of town tomorrow, so something has to go bad here.
That's exactly how things work. Everything going well, obviously.
No, that's, and I remember when I was a kid too, anytime my dad would leave town, he traveled a lot for work, and anytime he would leave, something horrific would happen at or to our house. It's like, it never failed. So, hopefully she just ate too much crap, which is not too far of a stretch of the imagination, considering my parents were here yesterday, and we had junk food then, and we had some junk food today, and she's been running around and playing, so hopefully, it's just a one-time thing, but yeah, that's fun. So let's drop the puke.
Let's do that. Sorry, yeah. I got a little bit distracted toward the end of your story. My cat, angry that I will not let him sit on my lap, is now drinking out of the toilet.
Well, that's what, you know what? You're going to have some puke on your hands, too.
Apparently. I heard him jump up. I was like, are you freaking kidding me? And sure enough, he's sitting there. His head is completely in the bowl, and it's like taking all of my restraint not to go over there and kick him in. Just like make him go all the way into the bowl. But
You probably couldn't do that. Cats, like, they can put up a fight and claw their way so they just hang. He would just hang on the bowl.
He probably would. That's my cat for you. I guess he takes after his owner, just being a generally reprehensible idiot.
That's true.
Anyway, I mean, I guess we have hockey to talk about. Maybe we should do that.
Are we just ignoring the game? Well, you were at the Joe. So
I was at the Joe.
Let's start there. The game, let's not talk about that. But let's talk about your experience at Joe Louis Arena. Tell us who you went with and what you thought of your time at Joe Louis Arena.
As we have discussed a lot this season, I had been talking about wanting to go up to the Joe just to experience it. And I figured the last game there against the Blackhawks would be a pretty interesting experience. And I have to say, there are two elements to Joe Louis Arena. One is when you're actually in the seating bowl and in the rink area. Phenomenal. The atmosphere there is fantastic. All the banners hanging from the ceiling. The seats are rickety and ripped and nasty. And you feel like you're in an old school hockey rink when you're inside the Joe. It's really, really cool. Once you go out in the concourse, however, it's a cluster. It's horrifying. As somebody who doesn't like big crowds generally, that was a little unnerving for me because you had to deal with all of the people. Because I don't know, for people who haven't been to Joe Louis Arena, at the United Center, you've got like three levels, everything's cool. At the Joe, everybody's on the same level. Everybody.
Yeah, it's one big level.
And so I ended up posting some pictures on various social media accounts of the massive humanity that I had to fight through to go to the bathroom between periods. I did not get back to my seat until there was about 11 minutes left in the second period. And I left as soon as the first period ended. So it was a little bit of an adventure trying to get back to my seat. So between that and the fact there's not railings when you're walking up, and it can get kind of steep because the stairs are really skinny. Other than those two things, I enjoyed the show a lot. Thanks to my friend Jason for buying the tickets. And Jay, I bought you a present.
Is it my Sergei Fedorov jersey?
There were no Sergei Fedorov jerseys place, which was really mildly disappointing because I would have considered doing that as a joke more so than anything, but I knew you would have appreciated it. No, I bought you, they had these awesome pucks, and they have the Farewell to the Joe logo on them. I picked one up for you, so.
Oh, very cool. That's
you can
awesome.
Add that Red Wings piece of memorabilia. I was going to give it to you yesterday if we did the podcast at your house, but you had to ruin the plan.
Yes, yes. Life happened. It's been a very life-filled weekend, that's for sure.
As your weekends tend to be.
Yeah, well, so I went to the Joe a couple years, I think I went in 2014, I'm not going to do it now. I went with a friend of mine who's a big Red Wings fan, and it was cool to go with someone who really knew, like, the lay of the area and knew where to go, knew how to get us in the building and all those things. Did you walk through, like, the weird, like, twisty, turny ramp?
Yes.
Yeah. It's just such a weird city. And
yeah,
I didn't think
it, really
it was
is.
Quite as creepy and scary as a lot of people sort of set me up for it to be. But it was just kind of, I don't know, what strikes me about Detroit is that, look, there's all kind of things in Chicago that have closed. Buildings that haven't stopped being used, et cetera, et cetera. But when they're done, they get rid of them. They don't just let them stand there and rot for eternity. And that's kind of the problem. And it's funny, like you mentioned, or you see, like, you drive through any neighborhood in Chicago or any neighborhood in the suburbs, anything. If the area around, you know, like if there's businesses that are open, if there's lawns and homes that are maintained, it just makes the neighborhood, I think, people, like bad people, weird people, people that are looking for trouble tend to stay out of those areas. And I know economics play a huge role. I'm not just saying that, but wouldn't you think, like, if those buildings are there and they're removed, it creates less opportunity for shady blocks and shady areas. But I guess when your city is bankrupt, you can't really afford to even demolish.
Yeah, and they're going to have to figure out a way to pay to demolish Joe Louis Arena. I was reading about it. They are planning on tearing it down, and there was a big brouhaha about who was going to pay for it, because the city of Detroit, as far as I know, owns the arena. So they're going to, I guess, redevelop the land and do whatever. And I think the Red Wings are moving close to Ford Field and Comerica Park, and they're going to share the new Little Caesars Arena, or as I'm going to call it, the Pizza Box. They're going to share it with the Pistons. So I think it's going to be really interesting when they move into that area, because I think it's more conducive and designed to the sports kind of atmosphere, having them, like, kind of all in a central district like a lot of cities do. And it might lose a little bit of the character, because I really do think the Joe has a very unique character. It definitely, nothing cookie cutter about that place. It is a very interesting building.
It almost feels as if it was just kind of crammed into the city. Like, where can we shoehorn this building in? Because that's, like you said, there's only like a few ways in and out of it, and everyone goes the same ways. But I think, you know, I had a similar experience to you when I was there. But, like, for me, the first thing I thought was when I walked in there, and again, it was 3 years ago, walking to that building and seeing, like, that iconic, like, the flat-walled entrance where it says Joe Louis Arena. Like, all the sort of B-roll they would show during a Hawks and Red Wings game, to see that in person was really cool. And it was kind of like, ooh, my initial feeling was negative, because all those images are associated to me with the Hawks losing, you know, like forever and ever and ever. I mean, I've been a Hawks fan for, you know, what, almost 30 years now. And it's for a lot of those years, especially the ones where I was going to games and, you know, using my own money to attend, the Hawks were getting their asses kicked by the Red Wings on a regular basis. So those visuals of the Joe Louis Arena to me, at first glance, were negative. Like, oh, like it just gave me the chills and seeing the, you know, the hockey town on the ice and just the whole ambiance of that building. But I went there for a neutral game. It was Wings and Leafs. But like you said, like a full house, really, really cool, great atmosphere, like you mentioned. And you're right. Like every seat in the house is good. You know, that you're close to the ice no matter where you are. But if there's still time, if you guys want to get up there,
I think they had eight or nine more home games. I think they played tonight, so I think they only have eight. But yeah, they did like they're doing a little countdown, like eight games left, and blah blah blah. So, and it's just so cool, like just looking up at the rafters and seeing 11 Stanley Cup banners. That was pretty cool. I'm not gonna lie, I definitely made it a point to take a picture of that after the game.
Did you also make a point to stand up right in front of the camera as action was going on, like all the Red Wings
fans? Well, it's because where are you going to put a camera that you're not going to have fans in front of it, though? That's the problem. Like, there's no, like, separate levels. There's, like, really nowhere to put a camera that's not going to be obstructed. It's one of the quirks of the building, I guess.
Did I tell you about the press box there?
No, you did not.
So... you guys have seen, you know, footage of the United Center, Wrigley Field, whatever. The press box is, you know, multi-layered tiers of seats, even in crappy old buildings like Wrigley Field.
Oh, yeah,
not
the press
renovated.
Box at Wrigley is a, it's a little bit of a dump. I'm not gonna lie.
Okay, but it still seats a lot of people. Joe Louis Arena, if you go up in the press area, and I'm talking about, like, where the radio and TV play-by-play men are, the hallway is so narrow. You have to put your back against the wall and shove through. Two people cannot go through the hallway up there, okay? It's ridiculous. I've never seen anything like it before. I don't know how they function in a press box like that.
Yeah, it sounds pretty crazy, and I can echo everything that you've said about Wrigley Field, the lack of air conditioning, and it's definitely not got any bells and whistles at all. It's kind of funny going to all the different arenas in Chicago and just seeing how different they all are. Like, you go to a White Sox game, beautiful press box, so much room up there. It's comical how big it is. Go to the United Center. It's pretty nice. It's not the biggest thing in the world, but adequate seating for everybody. You get a lot of people in there. Go to Wrigley Field. All the creature comfort stuff is done. You are not going to have any of that.
Yeah, it's... So... I don't know. It's funny. And I think Wrigley eventually will be... upgraded. I'm sure it's not like on top of their priorities, but they're going to keep Wrigley Field and they're going to have to improve that.
I think it's like the last year of the project. They said they're going to work on the press box. The new media room at Wrigley is amazing. God, is it cool.
I've not been in there yet, but
it's fantastic.
I'll have to check it out because I remember the old locker room. I have not been in a new locker room yet. I know you have.
Yes, the new clubhouse is mind-boggling how huge it is. It's so crazy.
Well, the old one was on the equivalent of my high school locker room, for real. Like, it was very equal to that. All right, let's talk about some hockey, shall we? Some actual puckage.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, well, a solid win today against the Minnesota Wild, a four-point game, as Coach Q called it. And he called it a must-win, too, which was kind of out of character. Not something you hear him say a lot. But
they've been treating those Minnesota games like must-win games all season.
They have, and I think they said that leading into the last time or the time before they played them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Artemi Panarin scored on a one-timer. Can you believe it?
And everyone sent you one-trick pony references. By the way, if he ever scores a hat trick, I'm gonna buy you a six-pack of one-trick pony Pilsner.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's a benefit to you, I guess.
Yeah. See, like you said, though, everyone tweeted at me, this is sort of taking on a life of its own. And I don't think he's bad.
I get the sense that everybody gets
I hope
that.
So.
It's fun. It's just fun to do it, you know?
I don't want to bag on the guy, but every time he scores a goal, my point is proven. I got a tweet the other day saying, he's not a one-trick pony goal scorer. He's really good defensively and gets a lot of assists. I said, yes. And all of his goals come from a one-timer, which makes him a one-dimensional goal scorer. That's my point. He's not a one-dimensional player. He's a one-dimensional goal scorer. That's all.
Yeah.
But again, we said this last week, and I still feel this way. Let's just get to the playoffs. Let's go. I can't get worked up about these regular season games anymore. All the questions I've had have pretty much been answered, right?
Yeah.
Nick Schmaltz is for real. Ryan Hartman is for real. Richard Panik seems to be for real. Johnny Oduya in his two games with the Hawks this year has looked like the Johnny Oduya we saw in years past. There was a couple turnovers today, a couple tough plays for him, but he did that back in the day too, and usually would make up for it. So everything seems to be where it needs to be, so let's just get to the playoffs, please.
Were you surprised that Q had John Merced and Oduya sit in the second half of the back-to-back the other day?
I was surprised they sat at all. But yes, I was. And I like it. I'm not mad about it.
I'm not either.
If you've got guys who are not 100% that you know you need to win the Stanley Cup, especially Nicholas Hjalmarsson, give them the rest when they need it. Again, this.
And boy, you could tell though how badly they missed them in that game. Where I was sitting, I sat at the I sat at the end of the rink. The Blackhawks shot at twice. Mm-hmm. Every single defensive lapse that they committed, I was able to see, because you can see the play unfolding in front of you like that. Michael Roosevelt did a bunch of dumb crap. Duncan Keith had a couple of really bad passes. Trevor Van Riemsdyk did that thing where he was bad at hockey a lot of the time. It was a very weird experience, like just watching them be completely awful defensively. They made so many mistakes that night, and that was why Detroit won the game. The Blackhawks could not take care of the puck at all. And then today, Minnesota dominated possession, had tons of chances, used their speed a lot, but it didn't matter because the Blackhawks weren't making horrible mistakes that were allowing really quality chances. It was just a quantity thing more so. And Corey Crawford played out of his skull today. He played an incredible game.
And he's seeming to return to that form that he was at before the injury, and that's right in time. And you saw that, what's his name, George Glass or Jeff Glass,
Jeff Glass,
was sent down today, and I saw that Darling had been skating. So I wonder if they were saying 2-3 weeks for him.
Yeah, Quenneville was saying he's pretty sure. I think Darling is traveling with the team to Montreal. So I think the thought process is that he's going to be healthy enough to back up.
That's encouraging. That's a good thing. But you mentioned how crappy they looked against Detroit. This is the meatball fan in me coming out, but they didn't seem like they were totally interested in being there that night.
No, I completely agree.
And I don't want to be that, this is Detroit, it's an original six, it's your rival, you should try harder. But this is Detroit. It's an original six team, you should try harder. And it's the last time in the building.
There, you know what? They were 2 points that the Blackhawks could have used in the division race.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Had they won that game, they'd be ahead of Minnesota right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to get overly worked up about it, but I was just surprised to see, like,
though, right?
Yeah, of course. It's just weird to see them, of all the games, to sort of land egg. You'd think they'd be a little bit excited to play in that one.
Mm-hmm.
Against a historic rival in the last game in a historic building, but they did not seem too into it. And maybe your coach sends a message too when they say, "Well, you know, the middle two thirds of your defense, we're just going to bench."
Yeah, it wasn't.
And just see what happens.
It wasn't good.
Yeah. Well, again, not the end of the world. Nothing to obsess about. The Anaheim game. You just got to tip your cap to Jonathan Bernier.
What else could you have done in that game? Not only did they have 43 shots on goal, I think it was.
A lot of high quality ones.
They were
too.
A lot of good shots. And friggin' Jonathan Bernier. What? Tip the cap, move on. Like, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, it's the same as the Cam Talbot game against Edmonton a while back.
I have utmost faith that if the Blackhawks played the Ducks in the playoffs, they would beat the crap out of that team. I did not see anything that scared me about Anaheim.
No, and you've got Corey Perry now, who has been demoted to the third line in Anaheim. He has 12 goals or something?
Yeah, he hadn't scored since, like, February, and he got a goal against the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
It was a little crazy. Yeah, what's going on right now with NHL snipers? I heard a stat today that Alex Ovechkin hadn't scored an even-strength goal in his last 17 games. What the heck is going on in this league right now?
I don't think he hasn't scored a goal at all in 9 games.
That was correct. Yeah, he had not scored a goal in 9 games, and he had gone without a goal at even strength in 17. That's almost a quarter of the season. Trade him.
Yeah, maybe the Hawks can get the Caps to eat some salary, and we'll take him on for real cheap.
Yeah, we'll trade him for what? Marcus Kruger and a couple of picks. Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, not to spoil my what's it called? Hockey sin bin.
Oh, but, your sin bin. I'm gonna have to come up with
one. Yeah, you gotta come up with one. You did something bad in Detroit for sure.
I haven't done anything particularly egregious this week. I'm gonna have to think about that.
Well, just a quick spoiler, if you want to trade Thomas Yurko for Ovechkin, feel free.
Oh boy. Yeah. I made that comment in my athletic report card the other night. I was like, why do they keep scratching Dennis Rasmussen for Thomas Yurko? Yurko literally has done nothing since he got here. And you want? And I was like, now I see why Detroit scratched him all the time.
The same Red Wings fan who I went to the game with in 2014, we were texting the other night.
Insert wanking motion here.
And I said, yeah, Yurko hasn't shown much. And his response, Yurko sucks. That was it. And this is a guy who's not typically, meatball-y or non-analytical. It was, that is. So
yeah.
I guess we have our answer on Yurko. I just don't,
yeah, I guess
I don't know what he does. What does he do well? I know he scored a really cool shootout goal back in the day, a long time ago.
Thomas Yurko apparently can score if he's in a top six environment, but they don't need him in a top six role. They don't need a top six forward right now. Nick Schmaltz and Richard Panik are doing just fine.
And yeah, you can't kick a guy out that's having success. You can't kick him out because you've got someone else that can, to be effective needs to be there. No, it doesn't work that way. You've got to earn your space, and he's done nothing to earn it. And I hate to give up on a guy so quickly, but you've got to see something. There's got to be a flash here and there.
He's coasting at times. I that's the best and fairest way I can describe it. It seems like he is coasting at times, and I don't get it. I don't understand why. I don't get what he's doing out there. He doesn't back check. He's not particularly aggressive on the forecheck. He doesn't really generate scoring opportunities. Just he isn't really showing me anything. Like, do something well. Do something to show you belong on the ice with those 12 guys. And I think that's the message Joel Quenneville sent today. He's like, look, you've been playing like crap. We're not just going to keep running you out there hoping you do something. If you're not going to play, then you're not going to play. That's just the way it is.
Well, they've got plenty of other guys who have had a look up here and have shown at least something. Vincent Hinostroza has not scored with any regularity, but when he's on the ice, things seem to happen. You notice him playing, right?
Yeah,
he's a little bit chaotic. He's a little out of control sometimes, but he's out there being aggressive and making things happen. When Tyler Motte was here, he didn't have any real great assets. Hockey-wise, didn't have great speed, great hands, anything like that. But he was a good, smart hockey player that would work hard, win board battles, and then find himself in front of the net when the time called for it. With Yurko, first of all, he never has the puck.
Ever.
Like, I can't really analyze him with the puck because he never, ever has it. The few times he does have it, he does seem to just kind of skate his way like right into another player, almost as if he can't see them. And they just take it away, and that's the end of it. There's been nothing from Yurko that shows me what Stan Bowman saw in him. I don't know what it is. I know that he's got a better scouting eye than I do. He's got amateur and pro scouts all over the country watching games. So there had to be something that caught his eye about Thomas Yurko.
There had to be something you gave up a third-round pick for.
It's not caught my eye at all. I haven't seen a damn thing. Not even a glimpse of, okay, that was something. There was a little...
Yeah.
Maybe a play that didn't work out or a shot that was blocked, whatever. No, there's been literally nothing that I've seen from Thomas Yurko that makes me think that he's long for this team.
Completely accurate, and I completely agree with you on all counts there. It's just completely baffling to me why he keeps getting into the lineup over Dennis Rasmussen and Jordan Tutu. And I never thought I would utter the words, I'd rather have Jordan Tutu in the lineup than blank. I'd rather have him in there right now than Yurko. I really would.
He does something. He serves a purpose.
Yep.
He goes out there. He plays physically. Now and again, he'll drop the gloves And you saw him get an assist today. He had a goal the other day. The guy knows how to play. There's a reason he's been in the league as long as he's been.
I'm really disappointed that Trevor Van Riemsdyk didn't get his assist the other night to get a Gordie Howe hat trick at the last game at the Joe. That would have been kind of cool.
Well, see, this is another guy, too, that we've not talked about during this podcast yet. But he keeps scoring goals, which, to me, it's kind of frustrating because he's done really nothing else to warrant staying on the ice.
Yeah.
Some of his defensive play lately has been absolutely terrible. There was a play today, trying to think of who, might have been Niederreiter, was sort of driving in on him, and he didn't know which way to turn. He got all turned around, and once again, you saw him with his back to the forward that was attacking him.
I hate when he does that.
In the defensive zone. It's one thing if the guy's coming through the neutral zone and you're busting back to try to, you know, yep, stop him from scoring and you're going to turn around and face him. This was in the defensive zone. He's got his back to the forward with the puck. That, come on, man. That, and we talk about what we don't understand, what the coaching staff or Bowman sees in the guy. I don't know what Van Riemsdyk is doing to keep him on the ice versus Michael Kempney. I just don't see it.
I thought Michael Kempney put together a couple of nice games when Nick Hjalmarsson was out, and now he's not in the lineup again. It just, to me, I felt like he was finally figuring it out. Like he was given a chance and he was finally doing some stuff right, and then right back out of the lineup again. I agree with you, man. I don't get why Trevor Van Riemsdyk is just this like golden child who never gets punished when he does something wrong, never gets taken out of the lineup. It's frustrating. He has not earned a constant spot in the mix. He hasn't.
No. If his name wasn't Van Riemsdyk, is he still in the league?
If he was with another team, do you think he'd still be in the league? Or would he have been sent down to the AHL by now?
You would think so. Kempney is clearly better. And here's another thing. As much as we bag on the guy, when Rostoval's been out, he hasn't been awful either.
No, he hasn't. Like, he has bad moments. Like, sure. Friday's game was terrible. That was like a burn-the-film kind of game. He had several really bad turnovers and got caught. He got crossed up several times on rushes. He looked really bad. But for the most part, he's been okay. And you know what? You can deal with okay for a third-pairing defenseman.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, if I had to decide Rostoval and Van Riemsdyk, I guess to be realistic, I'm going Van Riemsdyk just because he's a little bit faster and he can make up for his mistakes better, but I just don't know what he's done.
Fortunately for us, we don't necessarily have to make that choice now that they've got Johnny Oduya. Now,
well, someone's got to be that six, though, and Van Riemsdyk's been in, and, you know, I want it to be Kempney. See, yeah, what you got. You know what you have.
I would love to see Campbell and Kempney together. I would love to see how that would work.
Be interesting.
Yeah.
Could be a little adventurous. A
little bit.
But it'd be, well, you know, it, I guess it doesn't matter. When the playoffs come, the Hawks pretty much roll four anyway. Brian Campbell will see some power play time and some good matchups, and they'll sneak him in that way. And I very much doubt that whoever number six is, you'll see what. What has it been kind of typically, 4 or 5 minutes a game from those guys?
And a little bit more, like eight.
Maybe.
Eight, nine, yeah.
So I guess it's not a huge deal, but it's just sort of frustrating. Like, what has he done that Kempney hasn't, is kind of my question.
Yeah, it's a really interesting conundrum that the Blackhawks have, because like you said, you're not looking for a lot, but dear God, do something, man. And I know he has goals in back-to-back games. Woo! He's also given up a million scoring opportunities that in all likelihood should have resulted in goals if they didn't. So, eh.
Yeah. Hey, well, if you're in the mood to order yourself a Trevor Van Riemsdyk jersey, maybe a Las Vegas Golden Knights version.
There you go.
For you.
Yeah.
You know, Triple Threat Sports is the best place to go in the area to get that done. But did you also know, my friends, that they're also the best place to go if your team needs jerseys? Whether you're an elite travel, high school, or college program that needs outfits, hundreds of kids, or if you're a beer and pizza league team with 12 players, Triple Threat can put you in pro-quality jerseys at pricing you can afford. Triple Threat Sports can work with you on every aspect of the job. Logo design, fitting, apparel for off-ice, you name it. And you don't have to be a hockey player to wear uniforms from Triple Threat. They can get uniforms and apparel for all sports, baseball, softball, football, lacrosse, and more. So for more info, call Chris at 708-478-478. 708-478-6090. That's 708-478-6090. Or email him for more info at chris@triplethreatsports.com. Triple Threat Sports, if you can wear it, they can make it. And we want to continue thanking Chris for supplying the shirts for the Patreon site. That's patreon.com/madhousepod if you'd like to support the podcast. Last couple weeks, I've been talking to you guys, too, about that 26 shirts promotion. We have sold upwards of 80 shirts. So thank you all for ordering. That's a lot of money going to Rush Hospital in memory of my sister, who passed back in January. That deal is over. The promotion's over. But thank you for everyone that did jump in and buy either the Welcome to the Madhouse or Duncan Teeth t-shirts. Much appreciated. Got a lot of money going to a great cause. So thank you for that.
Rocking. Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for the sin bin, or you got something else you want to get to first?
Well, considering we were just talking about uniforms and logos and stuff, I figured since we're going to have to obviously forego Addie's Fashion Corner tonight, based on illness, I've been watching a lot of World Baseball Classic lately, and I have a conundrum in my head right now.
Okay.
Do I want a Team USA hat, or do I want a Team Israel hat? Because the Team Israel hat looks amazing, and I love it.
Are you Jewish?
I am not, which is why I have a conundrum. If it was based solely on the look of it, I would just buy it. But
yeah, I think
since
that's
I'm
sort
not
of a,
Jewish, yeah.
That's a tricky situation. It's one thing if it's a country, and if the hat like just said Israel.
Israel is a country.
Well, I know that, but it's got the Star of David on it.
Okay,
and to me, that's more about a religion.
I suppose,
you should ask
yeah.
a Jew, probably. I'm not the best person to say. Maybe that could be a new segment on our show, Ask a Jew.
Ask a Jew.
But I would feel uncomfortable wearing an Israel hat. As much as I love the way it looks, and I think their uniforms are sweet with like the dark gray.
Yes.
They
yep.
look amazing. So if you're choosing between the two, get a USA hat. However, the USA hat is garbage.
It's
so
not
generic.
Very good. Yeah.
It looks like something you get at Walmart before the 4th of July.
I might end up getting a Team Canada hat because I think their hat looked really nice.
If you like that, may I recommend to you the navy blue Toronto Blue Jays spring training hat?
I actually just ordered one.
Yeah.
I love that hat.
That is very cool. I had one in my hand the other day, and I almost bought it, but I quickly decided against it because I knew I'm going to be at the tomorrow afternoon I leave for Mesa for spring training with the Score.
Yep.
And I know I'm going to be in that pro shop, and something there is going to catch my eye. So, you know, I got to be on top of those things.
On Tuesday, I will be flying out to San Diego. I'll be at the World Baseball Classic game on Wednesday night. I do believe Team USA will be playing in that game. So I will get to see Paul Goldschmidt and Giancarlo Stanton and all the boys. I think Chris Archer might be pitching that night, too. So that would be future Cub Chris Archer.
See, it seems like you're real into this, and I know I've noticed from your tweets that you are. You're sort of watching and tweeting along with every game.
I've been digging it, man. I really have been.
I thought I would be into it more than I have been. I really did, and I just, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's a time thing or just other options, because I know it's hard for me now to watch games that don't matter. I used to be all over that. Now it's like I get all excited for Bears preseason, then like one snap is off, I'm like, nah, I'm good. You know, like it's more of just a welcoming of the sport. And I can't, you know, now the Cubs have won the World Series and the Hawks have won Stanley Cups, these exhibition games don't mean a lot to me. And I know the World Baseball Classic counts for something, but...
And it clearly means a lot to the fans of other countries. Like that Dominican
yes.
Republic USA game the other night was incredible.
Well, how about the one last night with Puerto Rico and Mexico where people are fighting in the stands?
That was pretty rad. The Italy-Mexico game on Thursday night ended up being a classic because Italy came back and scored, I think, 5 runs in the bottom of the ninth. And Cubs prospect, Mr. John Andreoli, God, he's had a good run. I think he had another home run today. He's been raking in the World Baseball Classic.
Hmm.
So
another thing that's kind of gotten to me about that is it's not the best players playing.
For certain teams, it is. I think the Dominican Republic couldn't have done much better. They have an incredible lineup. I mean,
that's
you got
true.
Like Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, Adrian Beltre, Manny Machado. Team Puerto Rico, their infield, they've got Carlos Correa, Francisco Lindor, and Javier Baez.
That's pretty good.
That's mind-bogglingly good. And then you have the United States, who has never had Clayton Kershaw, Mike Trout, Chris Bryant, Bryce Harper. None of those guys play in the World Baseball Classic. Clearly, the one country who probably should care most about it, since we end up hosting a lot of it, doesn't. The United States doesn't care. It feels like a lot of other countries do, but we don't.
Well, let's turn this over to hockey, since we're in a hockey podcast. So we just, this last summer, had the World Cup of Hockey, where all of the best players played, and the ones that didn't were left off the team for moronic purposes, because their coaches are asshats. Uh-huh. But imagine how the World Cup of Hockey would go over if all the teams from around the world stacked their rosters with all their best players, and then Canada filled their team with like second tier guys, you know, like Crosby sitting out, McDavid's not gonna play, PK Subban, he's gonna miss it.
Well, PK Subban did miss it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but you know what I mean. Like, if the key nation, if the main country of the sport is out, I think it's hard for other fans to take seriously.
Yeah,
because it doesn't feel like the players are, and especially in America where. We don't like ties in sports. We want the game to be settled and guys playing 100% all the time. Like, we just can't get over, like, that's why I think soccer will never happen here, because, you know, the fact that they're not attacking nonstop would make Americans mad. You know, like, why are you passing it backwards? I stumbled across the old, you don't remember the Jason Sudeikis, NBCSN promos where he was the new coach for Tottenham Hotspur. But he was an American football coach.
Yep.
And that, it's totally true. Like, Americans don't like patience in sports. Everything has to be urgent, 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 urgent all the time. Or, you know, I don't know. I'm off on a tangent. But my point is that I feel like all these World Series, baseball classics and World Cups, they're all better when the best players are involved. And you see that in soccer. The World Cup is one of the biggest things, probably second to the Champions League, would you say, or was it even bigger?
I think the World Cup is
the biggest.
Bigger. Yep.
And the players care, and they find a way to make it the biggest thing.
Yep.
And you know, it's, they play year-round soccer. You know, you can find a way to do this World Baseball Classic and have it matter and have it count. And I don't know if it's, you do it in a, down in the South or in the Arizona, when the season ends, a sort of bonus baseball, because most of the players have not made it to the World Series, but they're still in game shape. You know, there's a way to do it. There's got to be a way to do it where people would get into it, and I just don't know what it is. Maybe it's the Olympics. Maybe if they had Olympic baseball where all the best players decided to play, people would get invested in it.
I don't think there is any way in God's green earth they're going to stop the Major League Baseball season for the Olympics. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that's why they have the World Baseball Classic, is so that they don't have to.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. I mean, could they theoretically, well, see, but then they'd have to shorten the season. They'd lose revenue.
Yep.
There's no way to do it.
No, I don't think the owners would go for it at all.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah. Kind of a bummer. You want to do the sin bin now? Maybe we'll make ourselves feel better.
Yeah, let's do the sin bin.
Let's enter the sin bin on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
You go to the box, you know, 2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame, you know. And then you get free.
The Sin Bin, as always, is sponsored by our friends at Marishka's Restaurant.
Oh, Marishka's.
It's not a sin to go to Marishka's.
It's sinfully good, though.
It's a sin to not go.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. That's smooth. That's good writing, Dickie. 604 Theodore Street in Crest Hill, just west of Route 53. You know Marishka's. Come on. Get over there. 815-723-9371. Family owned and operated at the same location since 1933. And it shows. That place is loved, and their customers are loved, and it's an old-fashioned place that treats you the way customers used to be treated, and should still be treated, in my opinion, damn it. Hand-cut products in their own butcher shop, including their own steaks, burgers, and the famous poor boy sandwich. Oh, yes. Dreaming about that. Serving the highest quality steak, seafood, and chops, and numerous homemade items made fresh in-house, including their onion rings and the double-baked potatoes. The Icelandic cod, hand-cut on premises. I finally had the cod last Friday. Amazing. Everything I thought it would be and more. They have a full carry-out menu and a full bar with craft beers. Banquet facilities for up to 110 people. So visit Marishkas.com and check them out on Facebook at Facebook.com/Marishkas. That's M-E-R-I-C-H-K-A-S. They're open 7 days a week and close only on Christmas, Easter, the 4th of July, and Thanksgiving. So we thank Marishkas for their continued support. We love them. We want to marry them. I would eat that every day for the rest of my life.
I agree.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think you you seem very gung-ho for Sin Bin today. So what do you got, sir?
Well, I kind of blew my Sin Bin wad. I am a very patient person when it comes to analyzing a hockey player. I will give a guy time, give him the benefit of the doubt. But I have pretty much flat out given up on Thomas Yurko after 2 weeks. And we went through the reasons before, but I think he's just, he has shown literally nothing. If I'm a guy that gets traded to the best franchise of the last decade, that's got a legit chance of winning a Stanley Cup, that's full of exciting young players and, you know, battle-scarred, proven veterans with tons of hardware, I'm going to do my damnedest to stay on that team and to impress that team and do everything I can to be part of that long-term. And he has shown absolutely nothing. And yes, his ice time has been limited, for sure. And yes, he's played on the bottom six, for sure. I understand that. But you've got, if he's a guy worthy of top 6 minutes, he's got to show flashes of top six play. Even when Nick Schmaltz was down there sort of floundering before he was sent down to Rockford earlier this year, floundering on the bottom six, struggling big time, still had those moments where you'd say, that's a first-round pick, right? You would see a play here or there, or a little decision, or a move, or a pass, or something that would indicate to you, this guy has special talent. I've not seen that from Yurko. It was not seen at all from him in Detroit. And I think we're looking at a career AHLer and a guy who probably will not be back with the Blackhawks next year. If he is, it's for dirt, dirt cheap.
I thought it was a really good pick when the Red Wings got him, I think, in the second round of the 11 draft. And he just hasn't panned out at all. He just is not, he's not great. And I haven't seen much from him to warrant enthusiasm or optimism, so I'm not calling a penalty on you on this Sin Bin one. I get, like, wanting to stay patient and feeling bad that you haven't, but why? Why should you? You've had enough game tape to kind of see that he's just not something's not fitting. Something's not quite right there. So, yeah, no penalty for you, I don't think.
Thank you. How about you?
I had a very, very, like, you know how, what's the old saying? People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Yes.
I chucked a boulder the other night when I was at the Joe. When I went to the bathroom after the game, one of the urinal, they have troughs there like they do at Wrigley Field. Mm-hmm. And I got to witness something I have never gotten to witness before, and I hope never to again.
Now I have to know. Hurry up.
Drunken Red Wings fans decided that they were going to continue peeing into a trough that was not flushing. And I got to watch and witness as a pair of fans sat there, you know, tinkling into the trough and watching it like the Red Sea parting just woof, come over the edge and basically go all over their feet. And I instantly took to Twitter and I said, I had the audacity to say that I've been to Wrigley Field and yet I have never witnessed this. And I got all high and mighty about the urinal troughs. I completely forgot, ignored, whatever, the 2015 season when fans were literally pissing in cups because they could not get into the bathrooms at Wrigley Field. So I am an idiot, and I went ahead and judged the urination habits of another fan base, thereby throwing a giant boulder inside of a glass bathroom stall.
All right, here's my defense of you. There's a different story when there's not enough bathrooms to accommodate people, and you just, I mean, that Wrigley situation was a disaster. And people were probably at the point where it was, I either do this or I wet myself.
Yep.
So they did it. I'm sure a couple guys were just drunk and didn't, you know, they were doing it to be ass wipes, whatever. To go into a working bathroom and see that, if I keep peeing on this, chances are it's going to overflow. And just go. That, to me, is a different thing. That is moronic. That's one of the dumbest things I ever. I mean, this reminds me of the night we had the really bad storm. You know, what was that? Like, all the tornadoes, maybe 2 weeks ago?
Yep.
Hope and I, we have, like, a well door. You know, like, the kind of goes down to your basement from outside? And I'm like, man, I should go clean those leaves off. I'm sure, you know, that thing is starting to fill up, and I know I hadn't raked the leaves off of it in a while. And, of course, it was filling up. So I scraped the leaves off, and it drained normally, and then I was sort of keeping an eye on it. And then came down and was heading out and had the door open, and the hail started coming. And then the hail was clogging the drain. So I'm, oh, my God, trying to push the hail off the drain, but it was ice cold, so my hand was freezing. So I literally just stood there and watched the well door drain overflow into my basement. Instead of closing the door and sort of like damming it off, like it was still going to come in with the door closed, but not as much. I literally stood there and was like, I can't do anything about this except close the door, dumbass. So eventually I figured out to close the door, and then it was like trickling, you know, it's still coming in kind of a lot. So I had a wet dry vac and I'm just like sucking it up as it's coming in the door as best I can. And then like damming it with towels, and that was okay. But it took me until I had like literally a river flowing in my back door for me to realize that perhaps I should shut the door and things would be better. So, and I wasn't even drunk. I have no excuse.
All right. So do I get a penalty for hypocrisy?
I'm going to give it to you just because I think that you're a guy that you try not to be. So I feel like if I give you this penalty now, it's going to, you feel like you served your sin. And
perhaps I will learn my lesson.
Exactly. I don't want to let you off the hook too easily.
Okay. All right. I think it's fair. I accept it. I might bark at you a little bit, but we'll see.
Okay.
By the way, we were just talking about Corey Perry about 20 minutes ago.
Yes, sir.
Just scored another goal.
Oh, boy. He's back.
Yep. The lid is off for Corey Perry. The lid is off the dumpster can. I'm sorry. I just called him trash. That was mean.
Just saw a tweet from Dmitry Filipich, who's a good follow on Twitter from Sportsnet. He says, Corey Perry only has 4 more years after this one at a paltry 8.625 per. Is Corey Perry the second coming of Dustin Brown? Your thoughts.
My God. I don't think there is ever going to be another. Well, okay, I take that back because NHL GMs always baffle me. That Dustin Brown thing is one of the stupidest freaking things I've ever seen in my life. Good Lord, he got overpaid. And for what exactly? I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's a guy, one of those, you know, he brings leadership to our team. And yeah, that's it, though. And some dumbass penalties and some inconsistent scoring. And, you know, that's like people rag on the Seabrook thing. And I've been critical of the deal, too. But, damn, at least the guy's still an effective hockey player. Mm-hmm. And his leadership, what happened the other night where they mentioned that? What was the other night? This is riveting stuff as I try to remember something that happened in some game where Brent Seabrook showed leadership. I don't know. Anyway, it was cool. trust me on that, I guess. Hey, man, it's late. Come on.
We're getting slap happy here in the final minutes of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
All right, well, it happens. When we get slap happy, that means it's time for emails. You ready?
Darn right I am.
Let's do it.
Email the guys at madhousepod@gmail.com or follow them on Twitter @madhousepod.
The email segment is sponsored by the Black Oak, a newish addition to the South Suburbs. The Black Oak is a full-service restaurant and tavern located at 9630 South Pulaski in Oak Lawn. The Black Oak serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner with hours from 7 a.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week. So if you're awake,
they're open.
Correct. With signature burgers, consisting of a proprietary blend of
short rib, brisket, and chuck.
Correct. Yeah. And a steak sandwich made from Australian Uyghur sirloin. You're sure to love every bite. It is Lent. Go on Friday. Get the fish tacos. They're amazing. The wings are also great. There's nothing bad at the Black Oak. It's a great place. They have 13 TVs, so you'll catch every minute of the Blackhawks. So stop by for an outstanding meal and stay for the great atmosphere. Contact the Black Oak at 708-572-4500 or on Facebook at facebook.com/Black Oak Tavern. The Black Oak, the South Suburbs' finest casual upscale dining. And like we say every week, when you go to these fine establishments, tell them the guys at the Madhouse Podcast sent you. And while you're telling them that, pop up your little podcast app and write us a nice 5-star review saying why you enjoy the podcast so much. If you think we suck, don't bother. You don't have to leave a review at all.
Yeah, like go do something better with your life than leaving negative reviews online.
Yes. But if you like the podcast, just give us 5 stars and a couple words on why you like it, and it will help us become more visible to more people, giving us more fame and fortune.
Yeah, because we definitely are making a bank off this thing.
You know it. Hey, yeah. Man, you know what, though? Because of the Patreon site...
We got some cool stuff, man.
I had to fill out a tax return.
Yeah.
So thank you. That means significance. So we appreciate it.
We're relevant.
Well,
we're relevant enough to the IRS.
We are regionally relevant. That's how
Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast, regionally relevant since 2015.
I don't know if you get this, like, James is famous. People know who James is. Do you get that, like, at family parties?
Yes.
Yeah, I get it, too. I'm like, there's a small niche of people. Chicago hockey sports radio fans know who I am.
You know what? And I still get friends who, if I get shouted out on the radio or on TV or whatever, they'll always text me and be like, oh, hey, so-and-so said something about you. My friend Sean the other day sent me a Snapchat video of Steve Rosenbloom shouting me out on 670 The Score. So apparently it's like still a big deal to everybody that I actually get mentioned occasionally on radio shows.
Yeah, I think I said last week, except my mom, who's never been impressed by anything I've ever done until I got in a Twitter fight with Bruce Wolf. Then she was like, Bruce Wolf? I used to listen to him. Oh, my gosh. Like, thanks, Mom.
Oh, my
Mom.
Gosh. Look
like
at
I
you.
Said, I got in a Twitter fight with him. Yeah. Tell me more about Bruce. Anyway. All right. First email comes from Angelo Iovino. I like that name.
I wonder if that's – I think I know that Twitter handle. So, yeah. Go ahead.
He says, hi, Zach and James.
Wow, what?
I was born in Chicago, raised by a diehard Hawks fan, to be diehard Hawks fans. Currently, however, I live in North Carolina. I've lived out here for some time now, and I'm disappointed in the hockey community here. Understandably, the Hurricanes are no snapshot of the Eastern Conference. Begrudgingly, though, since I moved here in 2001, the Hawks are 2-6-0 versus the Canes of Carolina. To my question, do you feel there are characteristic differences in regards to the style of play for Eastern Conference teams and Western Conference teams? I understand with the reshuffling of the teams across conferences over the years, it may be skewed now.
Yeah,
I think there is a bit of a difference. I think that the East is I guess maybe I'd call it more old school. It's a lot more physical.
Oh, heck yeah.
The players are built. Most of the really big players in the league play in the East. There's always exceptions, of course, but I feel like the Eastern Conference style of play is a little more old fashioned, a little more in your face, a little more dump and chase and hard checking, whereas the West is a more skilled game. It might just be a coincidence, but as for right now, that's sort of how it is. And James, it sounds like you agree.
Yeah, I do. I was kind of trying to figure out like a possible like explanation of it, like why that would be, like. Maybe the more limited travel schedule, perhaps? I don't, like, could that maybe have something to do with it? Guys have more time to recover, so they feel like they can kind of lay their bodies out on the line a little bit and play really physical hockey. It could be a reputation thing with teams like Philadelphia, who's always had a reputation, obviously. It's like a real, you know, physical bunch of guys, or the Rangers, or, you know, whoever. And there are obviously exceptions to this. Teams like, you know, Toronto, who are playing really, you know, fast, really aggressive offensive hockey. Teams like Pittsburgh do it.
Mm.
But I think there's like a combination of factors, and I think maybe both of the things that I mentioned, maybe that has a little bit to do with it.
I think part of it too is the reason they play that physical style is because rivalries are older and more local.
Yeah,
like you've got a lot of really, really close geographic teams there, and long time rivals. You know, the West, most of the teams out West are newish. Whereas, you know, five of the original six are in the Eastern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
So they've had a little more time to develop those rivalries. So I think those two factors are definitely a thing. But like you said, it could be shifting, you know, with the addition of Columbus and Detroit. And now with the youth movement in Toronto, you could see the offensive speed thing picking up there a little bit. All right, email here from Charlie Farrell, he says, he always calls us James, J-A-Y-M-E-S. I like that.
Ah,
I appreciate that. He says, with recent talk in the podcast about names, I wonder, what would your hockey names be if you made it to the pros? It's got to end in E-R or Y, right? Kaner is easy, but what would you be? Zawasker, Zawer, Zaw-E? And for you, he says, Nevy, Never. What are your thoughts? I was given by Dan McNeil the hockey nickname Zawser, which I think kind of works. I don't know what else mine would really be. And for you, I don't know, like maybe like, I think they'd take your name and make like Nova or something like that. Like they'd find a way to like with Crow, with Crawford, like they find a way to make it something else.
Or they like, maybe they just call me Jim. Like they call like Artem and Isimov, they call him Artie. Yeah. Maybe something like that.
This, but it ends in Y, see?
Yeah, that's true.
Jamal Mayers, they call Jammer.
Jammer, yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah. I need to talk to maybe I'll talk to Brent Sopel if I run into him at NBC. I'll see what kind of hockey nickname advice he can give me.
That would be super helpful. I would appreciate that. I'm apparently talking very loud. My wife can hear me. She says yours would be Noves.
Noves.
Or Noves.
Noves. I don't know how I feel about that. I kind of liked Never. That was all right with me.
Yeah, but it's like, it doesn't sound like
it sounds very negative.
Sounds like exactly. It sounds like an insult.
Right. Yeah, I can see that.
She says Noves. She just corrected me. Noves.
Wait. Is she actually in the room?
No, she's upstairs. Under a vent or something.
Yeah, she didn't give you the... She didn't give you the traditional greeting.
I don't think she's in the mood to make her usual podcast appearance as she's been cleaning up vomit all night. But who knows? Maybe she'll surprise me.
Nothing more arousing than that.
No, that sounds really fun. Okay, Jinjin Burger.
Jinjin.
He said homework number one, CCD stands for cold coffee decaf. No. And then he says... The real question was, who do you prefer in the first round, Blues or Predators?
There you go.
And he says, I want the Blues, mostly because I love to hate them. Okay.
I can accept that.
Quick and easy.
Yeah. Way to go, Jinjin Burger.
Here's our buddy Ramblin' Grimace, who was very helpful with our podcast logos for last week's Facebook Live.
And he generally is helpful with everything.
He's a good man or a woman. I can't assume it's a dude because he will not tell me, or she will not tell me.
Purple plush creature.
Correct. He says with 88 points, the Rangers currently sit in fourth place of the Metropolitan Division, but in possession of the first wild card, seeing as this would likely mean a first round playoff date with the winner of the Atlantic. And that team is currently the Montreal Canadiens with 84 points, four fewer than the Rangers.
God, that's dumb.
Who gets home ice? The answer is...
The Canadians,
because they won their division.
Yep.
Hockey, baby. Leo from St. Louis. Wait, no, STL. Leo in STL, not from STL. Okay. But he's not from there.
I wonder if he's being held there against his will. Blink twice if you can hear us.
Yes. Leo will be there to help you.
Yes.
He says, I listen to / read intelligent info from sources like you. That's a mistake. Fells and Company, The Athletic, and Blackhawks Breakdown. Do you have any illusions that the Hawks use analytics? That the Hawks analytics use outside media to optimize matchup strategy, etc. So the question is, do they use information from people like Blackhawks breakdown, or
I strongly doubt it. They would imagine have their own proprietary data sets and all that, and guys working on those kinds of numbers. So no, I don't think so. I don't think they kind of put their finger in their mouth and then see where the prevailing wind is going. I don't think they do that. Do you?
No, I think that, well, the other thing too, that the stuff that stat places like that, and especially Blackhawks Breakdown, the best in the business, that he provides, it's stuff they could do on their own. It's basically just graphing, and you know, they've got their own ways to sort of look at it. I think Blackhawks Breakdown, what he's great at is presenting it in an understandable way, and like the graphics he makes are very clear, unlike some of the other ones where I look at them and I say, I know hockey pretty well, and I know analytics, and I have no effing idea what I'm looking at right now. Mm-hmm. Or what any of it means. Everything he does, I know what it means. So the info is not his invention. The stats are not his invention, but the presentation is how he does it, and that's what makes him stand out to me among others. So long story short, I think the Hawks probably do it on their own, and they do it, present it in their own way, so they have like their own universal organizational way to look at things, and they all have the same info. And then they also don't have to worry about someone having a typo or counting wrong, or, you know, they've got checks and balances there that, you know, give them the info they need. Just like with Theo Epstein, you used to talk about Carmine and Boston, and it's got another name here. I forget what it is.
Yeah.
But it's just their proprietary, metric system that they use.
I think it was one of my favorite I read the article that Wright Thompson wrote about Theo Epstein back during the summer. My favorite bit of that article was literally the very beginning, where you walk into their offices at Clark and Addison, and they have all these equations written on the glass in their offices, and they're all completely meaningless. it's just a bunch of like random algebra that means nothing, and everyone always like oohs and ahs at it, and Theo and Jed just sit there and they chuckle, knowing that it doesn't mean anything.
Isn't it called Ivy? Isn't that the Cubs version of Carmine?
I believe it is called Ivy, yes.
Something like that. All right, last email of the show goes to our pal Ryan Tennant.
Pal. He's not mine.
Wow. What a dick.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
All right, well, Ryan.
Ryan is always very good to us.
All right, he's got a couple thoughts here. The second part's long, but I'm going to read it because he emails every week and I like him. So
good
first
boy.
For the homework, the Blues are absolutely my preferred first round opponent for the Blackhawks. Jay Gallen sucks.
There you
and
go.
And so does their blue line. Tarasenko is the only real offensive threat, and the rest of their forwards don't have the kind of speed or skill to really threaten the Blackhawks in a 7-game series. I don't really fear Nashville or Edmonton either, though I do think Edmonton has the kind of speed that might prove annoying to the Blackhawks. The biggest threat in the wet. In the West seems to be the Wild, but the Hawks have suddenly won three straight from them, and they have a penchant for cracking even the hottest of goalies like a pinata and feasting on their delicious candy innards.
God!
Giving enough wax at them.
What a great metaphor. I appreciate it.
So I'm not too scared of Dubnyk. Now on to the other point. In the last podcast, you mentioned some criticism of Sam Bowman, and it's something I simply cannot fathom. I don't think any team has been more competitive over his time as GM than the Blackhawks. And while they've had a few first-round outs in the playoffs, they've had enough talent on the roster every single year to realistically compete for the Stanley Cup, with the possible exception of the 2011 squad that still took overtime to Game 7 to put down. Bowman hasn't been perfect, but what is his biggest sin? A marginal overpay for Kane and Taze when it looked like the salary cap was going to grow substantially every year?
Mm-hmm.
Paying Seabrook like a great player in his prime instead of a good player on the downside of his peak? Even looking at guys he's traded away, the only two I really miss are Bufflin and Saad. Both moves forced by the salary cap and not made because of talent evaluation. He probably hasn't won every deal he's made, but it's hard to say he's really lost any either. Despite the Blackhawks being up against the salary cap every single year, Bowman has built a team that is a threat to win the Stanley Cup every single year while working some kind of voodoo magic in the draft, despite consistently picking towards the back end of it. That fans feel the need to criticize Bowman because they like Dale Talon is just beyond my comprehension. No knock on Talon, but how many times have the Panthers raised a banner with him in charge?
Whew.
That's it.
That's a lot of... There it is. That's a mic drop kind of thing, man.
I think Ryan summed it up very nicely.
I really think he did. And I completely agree with him that even trades that by all measure he should have lost, i.e. Brandon Saad, he didn't. Nope. I think it can be argued that Stan Bowman won that trade. Even though Brandon Saad is an incredible player, I think that considering all the factors, including you had to get rid of him, I think they won that trade, I think. I think you can make that argument.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast, which has been brought to you by Triple Threat Sports. For all your team outfitting needs, call Chris at 708-478-6090. The Black Oak in Oak Lawn, the South Suburbs' finest casual upscale dining, and Marishka's in Crest Hill, family-owned and operated since 1933. Thank you all very much for listening. I am headed for Arizona. James is headed for San Diego. We will do a podcast when I get back and James is in Phoenix.
That's
we will
correct.
Make that work. We'll get that done via Skype like we do most weeks. But until then, we will talk to you guys very soon on the next Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast when hopefully Addie's Fashion Corner makes its glorious return.
Praise be to God.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.